Good morning. It's good to see everybody today on this beautiful fall Sunday morning. I've been told when I walked in the door, I was thanked for my shirt because they said, obviously, you are becoming an OSU fan. And I told them that was the furthest thing from my mind this morning whenever I chose clothes to wear. I did choose my own clothes today. Sometimes I don't. Often I don't. I did today. I was just looking when I was standing in my closet. I thought, now what clothes are going to work for me today after Thanksgiving? And this is what I chose. So in essence, this is my fat suit today. I'm having a fat day, and this is going to work out for me. If you're concerned, I am still an LSU Tiger fan. I have a feeling that OSU and LSU might meet in the championship. Lord help us. I love worship, and thank you to our worship team for leading us in worship this morning. Praise God. I love worship because it's when we're worshiping God that in essence, we're singing love songs to God. We're saying, I love you, Lord. And today we sang, Hark the Herald Angels Sings, and that's a song about God. And then sometimes we sing songs to God. And when we do either, it's the same thing as whenever we're singing to or singing about the person that we love. I don't know how to make this work. It's not on. Help me, Jesus. No, still not on. Well, here's a. I turned something that said volume. That would need it to happen? Somebody from the back, tell me yes, no, maybe so. Okay, very good. So sometimes we sing about people. Ready? I've got sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. My girl, talking about my girl, come on. I've got sunshine on a cloudy day. Yeah, I knew y'all knew this. When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. Now, sometimes we sing about the person. Sometimes we sing to the person. You are so beautiful. To me. Thank you. So sometimes we sing about God. Sometimes we sing to God in worship. Some of us have preferences that we like one way of doing it better than the other way of doing it, but both of them are sharing love. They're singing love songs to God. And as we would sing to our spouses, and some of you are thinking, well, I've never sang to my spouse, and my spouse has specifically written and asked me not to sing to them. Whatever your situation may be, when you are singing to them, when you're singing love songs, or even listening to love songs, thinking about your spouse, what you're doing is you are remembering the wonder and the beauty of the one that you married, the one that you're in love with. You are connecting to them in a unique way. And in our series today, we're beginning with the thought of welcome to Wonderland. Welcome to Wonderland. Years ago, I stood on the edge of Waipio Valley. Waipio Valley is on the north side of the Big Island of Hawaii, and it's this huge valley that a beautiful river runs through. And I think we have a picture of Waipio from the overlook. I had the privilege of baptizing my sister and my brother-in-law on that beach down there, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful scene. And I stood there and looked, when you look to your left of that picture, you see up into the valley, and you can't see it all. No matter where you're standing, no matter where you're at, even if you're down in the valley, you can't see it all. And as I stared at it, I think we have another shot of it as well, looking up into the valley, and there's people that live down in that valley, and there's one road that goes back through there, and there's horses that graze, wild horses that graze in there, and there's that beautiful stream that runs through it, and it's an amazing place. And as I stared at it, my heart beat just a little bit faster, and my breath caught in my lungs a little bit, and I stood there in a moment of wonder. A moment of wonder, overwhelmed by what I saw. I was scuba diving in Hawaii. I enjoy scuba diving, and whenever you're down in the ocean, you come up against these large formations that have just developed over many years. See, under the ground in the islands, there are these big tubes, and they're called lava tubes because they're formed by the lava as it flows down, and it's hot into the ocean, and finally it begins to cool, and what's left is these large open tubes that run up into the land of the island. And sometimes, you know, you can cut into them or what have you, but when they get out into the ocean, the tubes form, and it's incredible. But as the ocean hits those tubes repeatedly, erosion begins to occur, and eventually what you have is these very large arches under the water. And so I was scuba diving one day, and I came upon one of those big arches, my scuba buddy and I, dive buddy and I, and we came upon a couple of those arches, and I was blown away by it. And so I began to swim through the arch. And when you go through the arch, the coral has grown up all around it, and you're in the arch, and you can swim upside down and look all around, and you're just surrounded by this beauty, and by the fish that are there, and by the eels that are there, and all of the wonder that's under the surface of the ocean is there on display. And it was absolutely just mind-boggling and phenomenal. And I thought, this is absolutely overwhelming. And my breath was coming faster, and this is just overwhelming. And then I swam out the other end of the arch, and when I did, I realized that I was right about just a couple of yards off of the cliff where it drops off again. See how the islands work is it comes down off of the land, and it drops down into the first drop into the ocean, which is usually goes down to about 60, 65 feet. So, and between 40 and 60 feet. And so, and it's there for a little while, and then you drop off, and it's on the Big Island specifically, it's a very sharp drop off where you go from about 60 feet to about 2,000 feet. And I was at the edge, and I'm looking into just blue nothing. And I realized China's over there, and I don't have enough air to get there. And just the overwhelming vastness of this space was just... And then I thought about what our dive instructors taught us, and that is that the really big fish wait down there for the small fish to come out over the drop-off where they come up, and they eat the little fish, and I felt like a very little fish. So I began to turn back into the place where I could have parameters in my life, because I could see the top, the surface, and I could see the bottom. And once I got over here, I couldn't see the bottom anymore, and I couldn't see the edges anymore. So back to the place where I had some level of comfort, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw something big moving. And I thought, if it's going to eat me, I want to face it. And so I turned to look, and what I saw was 4 or 5 giant manta ray moving through the ocean just a few yards from me. And they were just barely moving, it seemed like, but they were going so fast. And I just was caught up in a moment of wonder. I'll show you the picture of the drop-off where you can see it just goes to nothing. One of our favorite things to do on the Big Island, if you ever get the opportunity to go, you should do it, is to go to the top of Mauna Kea and go to the observatories there. Mauna Kea is one of the largest mountains in the world, and it's in the middle of the ocean, so there's very little light pollution. And the way that it works, the laws in Hawaii, you use types of bulbs that keep the pollution, the light pollution, to a minimum. And so when you're up there, you look up into the sky and you see something like this right here. This is actually a photograph from the top of the mountain. And with the naked eye, you can see the Milky Way spread out before you. When you use the telescopes that they provide up there, it's amazing. But even just with the naked eye, it's hard to even understand what's going on there. And more than once, I stood there with tears streaming down my face as I thought about the vastness of what's before me and how small I was in comparison. All that is created is there. And I just told you that Mauna Kea is one of the largest mountains in the world, and it is massive and it is high, but it seems so tiny compared to what I was looking into. And I stare up, caught up in a moment of wonder. In this series during the Christmas season, we're talking about wonder. We're talking about what wonder is and enemies of wonder. We're going to discuss benefits of wonder and how to build wonder into your life. But my prayer today, my prayer for us during this series, is that wonder will be enhanced in our life, or it will be restored to our life. And that's why we say welcome to Wonderland. If you're a note taker in your service guide, there's an opportunity to take some notes, and I always encourage you to do so. The notes look a little differently today than they usually do, because as we're launching into this, some things are taught and can be scripted out and they're easy to take notes on, and other things need to be caught by our spirit. And today, as we dive into this idea of wonder, it's more something caught than it can be taught. It's something that we respond to as much as we can, knowing that we cannot completely understand it all. Because when we talk about wonder, we're talking about the experience of seeing something that extends past our ability to understand. I see it, but I can't quite wrap my arms of understanding around it. I can't grasp it entirely. I stand at the edge of Waipio and I look down the valley, but I can't see the entire valley. And so my mind, the overwhelming size and beauty of it all is beyond my ability to fully grasp. I hang motionless over the drop-off in the ocean, and I look into the deep blue sea, literally, and I don't, my mind mind can't wrap around the vastness of what I'm sitting in right now. I stand on the top of Mauna Kea and I look into the night sky and I realize how tiny even this entire world that we live upon is in comparison to what I'm staring into. It's wonder. Wonder occupies the gap between the immediate and the infinite. You might say, well, Waipio Valley has ends. Yes, but I couldn't see them all. I couldn't experience them all. The ocean isn't infinite. It has boundaries. It has ends. It is contained in some manner. Yes, but when you're in the middle of it, you can't understand that. The universe itself, maybe it's infinite, maybe it's not. We can't tell for sure. The newest science can't define that entirely. And so we stand in wonder as the gap between the immediate, where I'm at right now, and the infinite is filled with this wow. And these moments make the mundane nature of life exhilarating and exciting. I think that they are necessary for a fulfilling life, but if they're not necessary, at least they are desired. Most people say, I want to experience a love that is overwhelming. I want to experience a moment that is overwhelming. I want to be overwhelmed by something in my life that causes me to just go, wow, this is absolutely incredible. In fact, science tells us that it's good for us to be overwhelmed with wonder. There's a white paper that was prepared for the John Templeton Foundation by the Greater Good Science Center at UC Berkeley in September of 2018. And it says, all experiences may bring with them a host of psychological, physiological, and social effects. Physically, studies have found that when we stand in awe, when we look in awe at something, that we have a physical sensation. We will have, some people report goosebumps or tingly feelings in their skin, or their heart rate will increase. I can tell you that my heart rate increases often whenever I'm looking at something like that. And there's some even scientific evidence to say that awe may decrease markers of chronic inflammation in our lives, and it can help us live a healthier life just by seeing something that is awe-inspiring. Psychologically, seeing something that we can wonder at brings a smaller sense of self. It's called the diminished self or the small self, and it causes us to see ourselves as smaller. But oddly enough, it also causes us to feel like we have more available time to us for things that we enjoy and love. It increases feelings of connectedness with other people. It increases critical thinking and the ability to make good decisions. It increases positive moods. Some of you need to be wondered over something. If you're having in a bad mood, find something to be awed by. It decreases materialism. In fact, socially, this is still all from this white paper, socially, many studies say that experiencing awe and wonder makes us more kind and generous with our fellow man. So no matter how you look at it, looking in wonder at something is good for us mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. In fact, wonder incites aspiration, allows you to see something greater. It's so easy to become critical or negative about the things that are normal in our life, the things that we are closest to. We think about the everyday things like our family. We're close to our family and we love our family. So we all get together with our family for Thanksgiving, and where we all get irritated by our family and frustrated in that conversation. In fact, my father was an East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff for a number of years, and he used to tell me as we got closer to Thanksgiving, he said, Thanksgiving is going to be all hands on deck because families are enjoying time with one another, and then they start drinking, and then they start fighting, and it's one of the greatest times of domestic violence in the year. Yay, family. We can easily become critical about our family. We can become critical about our spouses. We can become critical about our jobs. We can become critical about our children. We can start looking at things and picking them apart and saying things or thinking things like, they don't appreciate me for who I am. They don't respect me the way that they ought to, or they certainly don't deserve me. Anybody willing to admit that they've thought those thoughts before? I have. I've thought those thoughts before. But I want to ask you for a moment to think about the last time you observed the same thing, but thought something very differently. Yesterday, I had the privilege of officiating a wedding. That groom and that bride, as they stood there before me, they weren't thinking, I hope. He wasn't thinking, she just takes me for granted. She never appreciates everything that I do for her. And I don't think that she was standing there thinking, he doesn't really care about me. I don't know if he ever has or ever will. No. See, when something is not normal, we can become aspirational about it. About the day you got married, the day you gave birth or had your first child, about the day you got hired to that company or received that promotion, about the day you purchased the company or became the CEO of your own thing. Those days you were aspirational. You said things like, I want to be the man that she deserves. I want to be the woman that he deserves. And what an amazing life we're going to build together. How about, I want to be the father or the mother of this child that they deserve to have in life. I want to do things some of us might have said. I want to do it better than my parents did it. I want to give them a life better than the life that my parents gave me. And I that's what I want to be. Or I want to be the employee that this employer is thankful that they hired. Or I want to be the employer that people are excited about going to work for. And I really want things to be good. We were aspirational in our thoughts. But as things become more normal, they become our everyday, we become more critical of those things. In fact, the old saying is familiarity breeds contempt. And so, I mean, I can tell you that when I walk into the room, my children do not say, I stand in awe of you. They should, but they don't. When we become familiar with something, it's easy to become critical of it. And what changed? What changed between the moment that we stood there saying, I want to be the best that I can be in order to help, in order to give them and be with them and connect with them in the way that they need somebody to connect with them. And the moment when I stand there saying, they don't appreciate me, they don't care about me, they don't honor me the way that they ought to. What's the difference between the two? The difference between the two is how I see myself. Where I'm standing in the picture. You see, the first mentality, the focus is all on them. This new child is coming to the world and I see them and I want to be everything that they need me to be. I stand there looking at my bride and I want to be everything that she needs me to be. I look at this church and I want to be everything that this church needs me to be. And each time, the job, whatever it may be in your life, I want to be what that thing, what that entity, what that organization needs me to be. I'm aspirational in that. And the second view says, I am the center of the world. And everything revolves around me. And if they don't, and they're not treating me the way that they should, they're not looking at me like they should, they're not honoring me like they ought to. And it's all about not me giving out of me, but me receiving from the other entities. It's a me first mentality. See, God knows our need for wonder. So he made wonder available to us. In Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, a familiar passage at Christmas time, and I pray that it will be a familiar passage to us consistently. It's the God of heaven is speaking through the prophet Isaiah, and he says, unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. And the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called. And he's about to utter the first descriptor of what this child is going to be and how this child is going to be. He is just about to utter the words that will define for us what this child that's being birthed into the world should be. And he says, he shall be called Wonderful. He will be a wonder, is what that word means. Now, I know theologians and scholars will say that, well, the wonderful counselor is actually one word. It's wonderful counselor, or wonderful counselor, mighty God, everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. That's all one concept. No matter how you break it down, he begins with the descriptor of wonderful. He will be a wonder, and when you look upon him, when you have this child in your life, wonder will occur. He is a wonder. Wonder will be born among you. And when you see him, when you experience him, wonder is the result, because he's consistently out of reach of our comprehension. We talk about him, we understand things about him, but we can't quite completely understand him. Every time I think I've got a grasp on who Jesus is, all of a sudden he reveals another aspect of himself, and I have to stand in wonder once again. I don't understand how he can be all that he is. I can't explain entirely how he is what he is, but yet he is. And it's simply wonderful. See, God will never be completely understood. No matter how we try and how much we study, he will never be completely understood, because he's God. He's outside of our comprehensible abilities, and we can't understand him directly. So we do with him just like we do other things in the universe that we know are there, but we can't comprehend entirely. We begin to look at the effects that the unknown has upon the known, the thing that we can see. We begin to look at how the thing that we can see is affected by the thing that we can't see. So here we begin to learn about him, but even that is beyond us. We can't understand that entirely either. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 17, this is Solomon writing. He's a smart guy, and he says, I observed all the work of God and concluded that man is unable to discover the work that is done under the sun. Even though a man labors hard to explore it, he cannot find it. Even if the wise man claims to know it, he is unable to discover it. And each new discovery of him, each new discovery we have of our own universe, brings us to greater amounts of questions of things that we cannot know and do not understand. And I cannot tell you that I understand exactly how Jesus does what Jesus does. I don't know why he did how he did what he did with my parents, who were drug addicts and hippies and in a world just full of crazy. And one night they're sitting there with their friends and with some family of ours, and they're sitting there and they're completely baked out of their minds. They're high as kites, as we say in Louisiana. And somehow in this conversation, they decide to have this conversation about the book of Revelations, because the book of Revelation is best understood when you're high. That's a joke, if you didn't know. And so what they did was they called their one friend in high school that they said she might know something about it. And they call her, and Miss Pat Fleming shows up at their house, and she opens up the door, and she'd never been in this situation before. Marijuana smoke just billowed out of the door when she opened it up, and she walked in there, and I don't know why. I don't know why Miss Pat walked in there to teach them about the book of Revelation. I don't know why. If it had been me, I would have probably said, hey, so glad y'all are interested. Why don't you call me when you're in your right mind? But she didn't. She walked in there and she began to teach them about the scripture. And I don't know why, from that seemingly unreasonable moment, weeks later they walked into the church for the first time. And over the next few weeks, they gave their lives to Jesus. And they were instantly delivered from drug addiction and they never went back to it again. Praise God for that. Just a little while later, I was born. And I never had to know that life. I just heard about it. I don't know how Jesus does those things. It's beyond my ability to comprehend, but I stand and wonder at him. In fact, Paul marvels and laments at the same time in Romans 11. He says, oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Here's a guy who wrote 2/3 of the New Testament, and he's saying, as much as I understand about him, there's still so much I don't understand. But it's no surprise to God, because he told us himself in Isaiah chapter 55, verse 9, he said, for just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. Could it be today that if you're sitting here and you're saying, I don't know about all this and I don't know, could it be that you have just become normalized to this thing, this one called Jesus? He's just become a normal part of your world, and you need to just take a minute and step back and realize what you're really connected to. We can't wrap our minds around him. But if we see him, we see him, we stand in a lifetime of wonder. Every morning we have the ability to get up and go to a quiet place and spend time with him and allow his presence to overwhelm us once again. Allow his word to speak to us once again. Allow his wisdom to enlighten us once again. And each time, new and fresh wonder falls upon our life. But just like in the world that we're living in, the only way to see him, to experience his wonder, his majesty, is to get ourselves out of the center of the picture. To see ourselves in relationship to him, not see him in relationship to ourselves. When I see him, I'm drawn to him. I'm drawn to his infinite power. I'm drawn to his incredible love. I'm drawn to all that he is. At some point, I just have to say, I just have to express somehow. I stand in awe of you. I stand in awe of you. Holy God, to whom all praise is due, I stand in awe of you. Why don't you close your eyes for a moment? If you want to lift your hands, lift your hands. If you want to bow your head, however you want to do it. But I'm asking you just to focus your heart and your mind upon Jesus right now. Not from the standpoint of what he's about to do for you and how he's going to do work in your life, but for who he is. The Alpha, the Omega, the one who makes all things new, the one who contains the hope of mankind. The all-powerful, the all-beautiful, the all-wonderful one. A wonder to behold. A wonder to experience. The one who can save you. The one who can empower you. The one who can do all the things that you know he can do. But also the one that goes far beyond your ability to comprehend. I stand in awe of you. I stand in all of you. Holy God, to whom all praise is due, I stand in all of you. Could you stand with me and sing it? I stand in all of you. I stand in all of you. Holy God, to whom all praise is due, I stand in all of you. Our prayer partners are coming forward right now. If you need prayer for anything at all in your life, I want to encourage you. Come to the one who is awe-inspiring. Join with someone else in agreement and allow God to touch your life. It doesn't, maybe it doesn't have anything to do with what I've talked about today. Maybe it's something else going on, anything going on in your world. We're here to pray with you. We want to pray with you. We want to see Jesus touch your life. We're going to sing this song in worship. I just encourage you, open yourself up to being awed, to standing in wonder of the one who saved you. Because he lives, life is worth living. Oh, thank you, Jesus. Let's worship him in closing today.